is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Dianne Feinstein, as we speak, Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, is basically dropping a report, shall we say, on the CIA's head. Let me pick up a little bit of Senator Feinstein. Here she is.
The information the CIA had provided was wrong. The CIA also misled other CIA White House officials. When Vice President Cheney's counsel, David Addington, asked CIA Counsel General Scott Mueller in 2003 about the CIA's videotaping the waterboarding of detainees, Mueller deliberately told him that videotapes, quote, were not being made, end quote, but did not disclose that videotapes of previous waterboarding sessions had been made and still existed. Source, email from Scott Mueller, dated June 7, 2003. There are many, many more examples in the committee's report. All are documented. The third set of findings and conclusion notes the various ways in which CIA management of the detention and interrogation program from its inception to its formal termination in January of 2009 was inadequate and deeply flawed. There is no doubt that the detention and interrogation program was by any major measure a major CIA undertaking. It raised significant legal and policy issues and involved significant resources and funding. It was not, however, managed.
It was not, however, managed. And she, I mean, this is like Frank Church going off on Richard Nixon. I mean, the only thing that I can remember in my lifetime, or maybe Sam Ervin going off on Richard Nixon or going off on the plumbers. You know, here's what happened in the White House. Here's it, or this is what. This is astonishing. Let me just provide a little context. In our first war, the Revolutionary War, we fought against the British. The British were famous for their brutality. They held what they called coffin ships off the coast of the United States, in the ports of Boston and Philadelphia and New York. And they would take American prisoners and you know, basically, you know, tie them up or put them in boxes or cages on these ships. And they were dying at the rate of, you know, a dozen a day. These American prisoners tortured on British ships, and they would just, you know, throw the bodies overboard. And I mean, it was a freak show, a horror show that every American knew about. How did George Washington respond to this? How did he respond to the fact that a couple of the founders of a couple of the authors of the Declaration of Independence, one of them in particular, I'm forgetting his name right now, his house was burned down, his wife was, you know, taken, his kids were scattered to the four winds. He never again got his family back. I mean, just horrors that the British did. Brutality, violence, torture, murder of prisoners of war. How did George Washington respond to that? Here is Hillary Clinton telling us.
When General Washington led his soldiers across the Delaware River onto victory in the Battle of Trenton, he captured nearly 1,000 foreign mercenaries, and he faced a crucial choice. How would General Washington treat these prisoners? The British had already committed atrocities against Americans, including torture. As David Hackett Fisher describes in his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Washington's Crossing, thousands of American prisoners of war were treated with extreme cruelty by British captors. There are accounts of injured soldiers who surrendered being murdered instead of quartered. Countless Americans dying in prison hulks in New York Harbor. Starvation and other acts of inhumanity perpetrated against Americans confined to churches in New York City. Well, you can imagine, the light of our ideals shone dimly in those early dark days, years from an end to the conflict, years before our improbable triumph and the birth of our democracy. General Washington announced a decision unique in human history, sending the following order for handling prisoners. Treat them with humanity, and let them have no reason to complain of our copying the brutal example of the British Army in their treatment of our unfortunate brethren. George Washington understood that how you treat enemy combatants can reverberate around the world. We must convict and punish the guilty in a way that reinforces their guilt before the world and does not undermine our values.
There you go. And would you forward that clip to Nate and Andrew, please? This is brilliant. Right, that was George Washington, our first president, the commander-in-chief of the military during the Revolutionary War, saying, not only don't torture the British prisoners of war, treat them nicely. And as a consequence of that, after the war was over, two things happened. Actually, one, British soldiers began surrendering in droves because life was tough being a soldier in the Revolutionary War, particularly during the winters. And they knew that if they surrendered, they'd be treated decently. So, you know, every British soldier who surrendered or every mercenary who surrendered was another soldier that we didn't have to fight. So that was the first thing that happened, and it helped us win the war. The second thing that happened was that after the war, an awful lot of the people who became new American citizens were former British soldiers or former Hessian or Prussian mercenaries, German mercenaries, who had come over here to fight on behalf of the British for a British paycheck. Had been and saw, you know, hey, these Americans, they're essentially human. And they stayed here. Number one, that's our first war. Our second big war was the Civil War. Now, I'm sure you've heard of the Hague Conventions. Right. But did you know that the Hague Conventions of 1899 and 1907. The conventions that deal with how to treat prisoners of war and basically not torturing people. The Hague Conventions that under which, you know, like Slobodan Milosevic was tried and Radovan Karadžić, the butcher of Sarajevo, the psychiatrist who organized the rape camps there and things like that. Those conventions were written by Abraham Lincoln. And submitted to the United States Congress for ratification on April 24th, 1863, at the end of the Civil War. It was called the Lieber Treaty, or the Lieber Code, excuse me. It set out comprehensive regulations for, you know, basically all of these things. Abraham Lincoln. One of the reasons so many Germans surrendered to us during World War II, particularly in the last 6 months of the war, the Japanese, you know, didn't know about this, right? Japanese media was very, very tightly controlled. But the Germans had figured out if you surrendered to the Americans, you'd get three squares and a cot. And again, German soldiers were surrendering to us at the end of World War II, enthusiastically. And now comes this god-awful crime committed in our name by our government. There's an op-ed in today's New York Times by Mark Mazzetti of the American Civil... that's the article. There's an op-ed by Anthony Romero, who's the head of the ACLU, titled Pardon Bush and Those Who Tortured. This is so solid. President Obama, here is your opportunity to say to the world, these people committed a crime... We don't sanction it. We are not that. We are better than that. Issue a pardon for George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and the whole bunch of them. John Yoo, Jay Bybee, Wolfowitz, Feith, the whole bunch. Issue a pardon for the crimes that were committed here.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And when you do so, invoke the memory of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. And for that matter, Franklin Roosevelt and Dwight Eisenhower. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Diane Feinstein is still going. Let's listen to Senator Feinstein for a few minutes.
$1 million. Ultimately, not all contract options were exercised. However, the CIA has paid these two contractors and their company more than $80 million. Of the 119 individuals found to have been detained by the CIA during the life of the program, the committee found that at least 26 were wrongfully held. These are cases where the CIA itself determined that it had not met the standard for detention set out in the 2001 Memorandum of Notification, which governs a covert action. Detainees often remained in custody for months after the CIA determined they should have been released. CIA records provide insufficient information to justify the detention of many other detainees. Due to poor record keeping, a full accounting of how many specific detainees were held and how they were specifically treated while in custody may never be known. Similarly, in specific instances, we found that enhanced interrogation techniques were used without authorization in a manner far different and more brutal than had been authorized by the Office of Legal Counsel and conducted by personnel not approved to use them on detainees. Questions about how and when to apply interrogation techniques were ad hoc and not proposed, evaluated, and approved in the manner described by the CIA in written descriptions and testimony about the program. Detainees were often subject to harsh and brutal interrogation and treatment because CIA analysts believe, often in error, that they knew more information than what they had provided. Sometimes CIA managers and interrogators in the field were uncomfortable with what they were being asked to do and recommended ending the abuse of a detainee. Repeatedly, in such cases, they were overruled by people at CIA headquarters who thought they knew better, such as by analysts with no line authority. This shows again how a relatively small number of CIA personnel, perhaps 40 to 50, were making decisions on detention and interrogation, despite the better judgments of other CIA officers. The fourth and final set of findings and conclusions concern how the interrogations of CIA detainees were absolutely brutal, far worse than the CIA represented them to policymakers and others. Beginning with the first detainee, Abu Zubaydah, and continuing with numerous others, the CIA applied its so-called enhanced interrogation techniques in combination and in near-stop fashion for days and even weeks at a time on one detainee. In contrast to CIA representations, detainees were subjected to the most aggressive techniques immediately, stripped naked, diapered, physically struck, and put in various painful stress positions for long periods of time.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. Dianne Feinstein still on the floor of the Senate, still talking about the basically crimes committed by our government. The focus of this report is crimes committed by the CIA and the contractors working for them. The report does talk about the CIA's interaction with the White House, but its focus is not the crimes committed by George Bush or Dick Cheney or Don Rumsfeld or Gonzalez or you or Bybee, you know, the Rice. I mean, the torture club in the White House. It only glancingly touches them. So here's the question. How does the Obama White House, President Obama put an end to this program the day he became president? We are, theoretically at least, outside of Guantanamo, we are no longer torturing people, it seems. And he's been trying to close Guantanamo, and Republicans in Congress have been forbidding him from doing that by law, by legislation that they pass every year. They're doing it again right now. They've been forbidding him from using any federal funds to move prisoners to the United States where they can be tried to court of law and if they're convicted, kept in a U.S. prison. So the lawlessness of the Bush administration has been held in place for 6 years by Republicans in Congress, exclusively Republicans in Congress, for one simple reason. Because they know that when history looks back on 9/11, history will record that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney went insane. That they were so terrified, these frightened little men, that rather than rising to the in the tradition of America, rather than rising and saying, we are bigger than this, we can deal with this, don't worry, we've got this. Rather than saying that, they say, oh my God, do something, hey, quick, beat somebody up. That's essentially the message. Kill somebody before they kill us. Got to kill them before they kill again. Right? I mean, this is George Bush executing over 400 people as governor of Texas. This is George Bush executing over 100,000 people as president. Mostly in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is George W. Bush overseeing the death of over 4,000 or 5,000 American soldiers. And we don't know how many contractors. So how can the Obama administration, I mean, having stopped this, how can they now say we're going to atone for this? We're going to clean this up. Well, the first thing that needs to be done is acknowledge what we've done. And that's what Dianne Feinstein is doing right now. God bless her. This is so much stronger than I expected. I'm just blown away by this. And she keeps saying, this is just the surface, right? This is just the beginning. There's a 6,000-page report behind this that you and I will never see in all probability. Although Mark Udall has been threatening to read it into the congressional record. I think his threat has been mostly about this summary that she's releasing right now. So how can President Obama say to the world, yes, George W. Bush committed a crime. Dick Cheney committed a crime. Don Rumsfeld committed a crime. Condoleezza Rice committed a crime. Antonio Gonzalez is Antonio, right? Alberto, thank you. Alberto Gonzalez committed a crime. The director of the CIA committed crimes. These particular contractors, here's the names of the contractors and the names of their CEOs, they committed crimes. These individuals in the field committed crimes. Come up with a list. Dianne Feinstein says it's only a few hundred people, that within the CIA it might be as few as 80 people who really knew what was going on and encouraged it. Come up with that list and issue an explicit pardon naming names. Because there is no chance any of these people are ever going to be prosecuted here in the United States. And this presidency is going to pass away in another year and a half, a little short of 2 years. Well, it'll be a little more than 2 years, actually. And, for the inauguration of the next president. But this is the last chance that Obama has. So how does he say to the world, yes, we acknowledge we committed crimes? How does he draw a bright line between the spirit of America that was reflected in that clip I shared from Hillary Clinton, the story I shared with you about how the Hague Convention, which could theoretically be used to prosecute George W. Bush, was in first draft written by Abraham Lincoln as a narrative about how the Union forces would treat the Confederate soldiers, prisoners of war. George Washington saying, give them no reason to complain about it. Now, some of the Confederate prisons where they held the Union soldiers were hell holes. And I'm sure that there were a few on the Union side, too. But Lincoln, at the end of the war, explicitly came out with this Lieber Code. Lieber is German for free, I believe. That became the defining, the definition of who we are and what we do. We opposed chemical weapons in World War I. Now, yeah, we were the first nation to use a nuclear bomb in World War II. It's still hotly debated in the United States, but we aggressively worked to, well, I don't know. I don't want to polish America's apple too much because, you know, we've screwed up here and there. But the fact of the matter is that history indicates that over time we get better. And it's one of the incredible things about this country. We learn from our mistakes and we get better. Whether the mistake was slavery, whether the mistake was the disenfranchisement of women, whether the mistake was deregulating capitalism in the 1920s and again in the 1980s, we see these, or in this case, deregulating the CIA, saying, go do whatever you want, and the worst of human nature coming in. The way to clean this up is for President Obama to issue a pardon.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
I'm guessing probably somebody has already started something, you know, one of that message board thing over on the whitehouse.gov where you can petition the White House for something. It seems like a good one. Welcome back. 28 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And John McCain is now speaking on the floor of the Senate, one of the few members, probably the only member of the United States Senate to have actually experienced torture. Here he is.
Of the Geneva Conventions and broadened definitions in the War Crimes Act to make the future use of waterboarding and other, quote, enhanced interrogation techniques punishable as war crimes. There was considerable misinformation disseminated then about what was and wasn't achieved using these methods in an effort to discourage support for the legislation. There was a good amount of misinformation used in 2011 to credit the use of these methods with the death of Osama bin Laden, and there is, I fear, misinformation being used today to prevent the release of this report, disputing its findings and warning about the security consequences of their public disclosure. Will the report's release cause outrage that leads to violence in some parts of the Muslim world? Yes, I suppose that's possible, perhaps likely. Sadly, violence needs little incentive in some quarters of the world today. But that doesn't mean we will be telling the world something it will be shocked to learn. The entire world already knows that we waterboarded prisoners. It knows we subjected prisoners to various other types of degrading treatment. It knows we used black sites, secret prisons. Those practices haven't been a secret for a decade. Terrorists might use the report's reidentification of the practices as an excuse to attack Americans, but they hardly need an excuse for that. That has been their life's calling for a while now. What might come as a surprise, not just to our enemies, but to many Americans, is how little these practices did to aid our efforts to bring 9/11 culprits to justice and to find and prevent terrorist attacks today and tomorrow.
Bingo, Mr. McCain.
That could be a real surprise, since it contradicts the many assurances provided by intelligence officials on the record and in private that enhanced interrogation techniques were indispensable in the war against terrorism. And I suspect the objection of those same officials to the release of this report is really focused on that disclosure, torture's ineffectiveness, because we gave up much in the expectation that torture would make us safer. Too much. Obviously, we need intelligence to defeat our enemies, but we need reliable intelligence.
This is John McCain pointing out that the intelligence that we got from torture was useless, that people have been trying to say so on Sean Hannity's show and other Fox so-called news, you know, that the whole parade of horribles has been out. Oh, yeah, we tortured guys and that helped us get bin Laden. No. John McCain, in support of Dianne Feinstein, in support of the Senate Intelligence Committee releasing this document. Basically, the only people who are opposed to the release of this document are the partisan Republicans who are concerned about the legacy of George W. Bush. And they should be running in the other direction from George W. Bush. I mean, you got this whole Reagan legacy project out there to put a statue to Ronald Reagan in every county in the United States and every country in the world. And they've done a really good job. They've named a lot of buildings. They renamed the damn airport here in the United States. I mean, here in D.C. It's just, you know, they've done a very good job of, you know, reinventing Ronald Reagan. So people don't remember him as the guy who doubled taxes on working people and cut taxes on billionaires, you know, by a quarter or by three quarters to a quarter of what it was. People don't remember that. People don't remember, you know, Ronald Reagan as the father of free trade. People don't remember Ronald Reagan as the guy who provoked the second wave immigration crisis, as it were. People don't remember Ronald Reagan as the guy who was importing cocaine into the United States, who was selling weapons to Iran, who cut a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages during the Jimmy Carter presidency so he could win an election. All these things that are matters of public record, by and large, have been washed away by the Reagan deification project of the Republican Party that's run out of the Ronald Reagan Center of the Republican Party, a block and a half from where I'm sitting. They want to do the same thing with George W. Bush. Right? Let's whitewash this. Nobody remembers. And while we're at it, we will, you know, the same way that they kicked Jimmy Carter around, we'll kick around Barack Obama. Obama, you know, Bush might have started this war, but Obama continued fighting. Bush might have, you know, tortured people, but Obama, you know, whatever. No. In my opinion, the way that Barack Obama can draw a bright line, President Obama can draw a bright line between him and the Bush administration is by following the suggestion of Anthony Romero, the president of the ACLU, and issue a pardon, which is, you know, essentially a prosecutor's brief. Put together a prosecutor's brief. Here's what would otherwise be the indictment of George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Alberto Gonzalez. You know, go through the list, right? Everybody who was involved in the torture program. Put together a prosecutor's indictment brief and then present it as a pardon. If Bill Clinton had pardoned Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush for the crimes they committed in 1980, messing with the election in Iran, throughout the 80s, from 81 through 86, dealing with, quote, terrorists, you know, selling things to Iran, giving weapons to the Contras, which today now is producing these death squads in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala. If Bill Clinton had issued a pardon to Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush, I doubt George W. Bush would have successfully run for president because his dad would have been a pardoned war criminal. Anyhow, your thoughts on this. Rebecca in Everett, Washington. Hey, Rebecca, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm so glad to have you on Free Speech TV. When we lost you on AM 1090 up here, everybody was truly upset.
Thank you.
I called originally because I wanted to remind you that some of these contractors, you know, were private agencies that they had hired.
Dianne Feinstein was just citing one and saying that they went on to get an additional $80 million in contracts after they committed these crimes.
Right. But now that's brought up another question in my mind, is if we do go after an indictment and a pardon, that kind of thing, being that company that performed this, and I think it was a private company at the time when they released this waterboarding and stuff that they were talking about. Couldn't they lay the blame on that private company? Isn't that what it's all about?
I'm sure they will try to do that. And if, you know, you arguably could have private companies that are going to have to somehow respond, you know, whether it's, you know, shutting down or whatever. But I would pardon them as well. I mean, we're not going. The problem is, I mean, you've got a Republican Senate and a Republican House coming into power. The Republicans are Mitch McConnell coming out, speaking out against releasing this report. When John McCain is sitting right now and standing, or he just finished actually, standing on the floor of the Senate saying, yeah, this is right. John McCain. Rebecca, I'm convinced that the only way that we're going to put it on the record that these guys broke the law, particularly given the kind of Congress that we have, is, you know, there's not going to be another Church Commission. There's not going to be any more investigations by the Senate Intelligence Committee, is for the president to issue a pardon. Rebecca, thank you for the call. Great, great point. Robert in Mission Viejo, California. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Yeah, I agree. And I was just thinking that, you know, since the way you put it is that he has to put out the bill of particulars along with the pardon.
Right.
The idea would be if you take the pardon, you know, you have to be explicit about it. If you take the pardon, you're admitting to having done these things. If you don't, then we're going to go ahead and withdraw your protection, and we'll leave it up to the world to come get you.
I don't think you can turn down a pardon.
You're on your own.
I think once the president pardons you, you're pardoned. You don't have any say in the matter.
But I think that they should have to accept the pardon.
Well, I agree. It would be nice if they basically pled guilty, but... the Constitution does not require, the Constitution says that the power to pardon is the president's, and it does not say that it's a qualified power, that, you know, it's, or a conditional power, that, the other person has to accept it. But I absolutely get where you're coming from, Robert, and I totally agree with you. Rick in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hiya, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Myself, too.
Thanks.
Hey, speaking of pardons, and we're pardoning all these other criminals or thinking of it, or, you know, hypothetically, what about Chelsea Manning? Let's pardon her.
Yeah, absolutely. Put her at the top of the list. I'm with you. And
yeah.
Julian Assange, Ed Snowden, although we're now kind of wandering into other territory. But, yeah, I agree. Chelsea Manning certainly exposed war crimes. That should not be something that ends you up in prison. Bob in Clifton, Tennessee. Hey, Bob, quick one.
I've got to disagree with you, Tom. I think that these war criminals should be tried.
But they won't be.
If you go the route you're going, I would demand a Truth and Reconciliation Commission so that it was widely publicized, not just a brief that no one in
America agree with you, Bob, reads. But a Republican Congress will not do that. And Congress would have to appropriate the funds for that to happen. It just can't be done by the executive branch. They have to have the appropriated funds. Congress has to appropriate those funds. The next 2 years, it ain't going to happen. And Obama's president. The one thing he can do is issue a pardon. A pardon is essentially an executive order. He can issue a pardon, and that is a statement. It is a statement that will be heard around the world. And I think it'll be, you know, quite consequential. Respectfully, Bob. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for sharing your opinion. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The other advantage of a pardon is that in many of these charges, the statute of limitations has run out, although arguably the cover-up hasn't. But still, I mean, you know, this is a way to speak to it. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jess, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Jess, what's up? In Oracle, Arizona. Hey, Jess, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just disagree with the pardon thing, because if you pardon them, that means they got away with it, basically.
Right.
They all need to be punished.
But they're not going to be. Jess, can you hear me? Jess can't hear me. Okay. Jess, thank you for the call. Here's my take on that, is that they will not be punished. This is the problem. Conceivably, the attorney general could put together a federal grand jury and could look into these crimes. President Obama could direct Eric Holder to do that, to investigate the crimes of the Bush administration. He can do that without congressional authorization or oversight, I believe. The executive branch looking into crimes committed by the executive branch in previous administrations. But he's not going to. And the simple reason why is because the crimes were committed by a president of the Republican Party, and he's a Democrat. And it will immediately become partisan. And that's why I think this idea of issuing a pardon, because they're not going to get prosecuted. They're not going to go to jail. We have a long history of not sending our presidents to jail, even when they commit egregious crimes. Started with Richard Nixon. Jerry Ford pardoned him. And then, Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton didn't pardon them, but chose to ignore their crimes. The Republicans went after Bill Clinton for his crime, or his twin crimes of you know, having sex with Monica Lewinsky and then lying about it before Congress or before a federal prosecutor. So the Republicans held a Democrat accountable. But, you know, anyway. Anita, watching Free Speech TV in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I have a question. Could any of these people that are implicated in this, could they be tried in another country or perhaps in absentia?
Yes and no. We are not a party to the International Treaty on Torture. We did not sign the document. And I believe that goes back to the Reagan administration, but I could be wrong. But I know that we're not a signatory to it. So The Hague could say we are bringing an indictment, you know, the International Criminal Court could say we're bringing an indictment of these guys and, you know, the long list and ship them over here, please. And we could simply say, no, we're not part of that. So and Spain, arguably, Spain has very liberal laws that allow individual judges to prosecute people from other countries for war crimes. This is how they got Pinochet. But it's extremely unlikely that they're going to do anything. I mean, they have sort of tried a couple of times and it didn't work out all that well. So, frankly, I don't think these guys, I think, you know, they're sufficiently powerful still to this day that I don't think they're ever going to be prosecuted anymore. So, we'll see. Anita, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Anthony Romero writing in the New York Times today about this pardon for Bush. He says, Mr. Obama could pardon George Tenet for authorizing torture at the CIA's black sites, Donald Rumsfeld for authorizing the use of torture at Guantanamo, David Addington, John Yoo, and Jay Bybee, who, by the way, is now on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, a lifetime appointment, for crafting the legal cover for torture, and George W. Bush and Dick Cheney for overseeing it all. While the idea of preemptive pardon may seem novel, there is precedent. Then he points out, Andrew Johnson and Abraham Lincoln, Vice President and President, President Lincoln, pardoned Confederate soldiers after the Civil War. Gerry Ford pardoned Richard Nixon. And Jimmy Carter pardoned Vietnam War resistors, draft protesters. We have a history of pardoning people in this country. He adds, the spectacle of the president's granting pardons to torturers still makes my stomach turn. But doing so may be the only way to ensure that the American government never tortures again. Pardons would make clear that crimes were committed, that the individuals who authorized and committed torture were indeed criminals, and the future architects and perpetrators of torture should beware. Prosecutions would be preferable, but pardons may be the only viable and lasting way to close the Pandora's box of torture once and for all, writes Anthony Romero in today's New York Times. Rick in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Rick.
Hi, Tom. I appreciate your program. You know, these issues with the CIA are, they have a history of immoral and anti-democratic behaviors, along with U.S. presidents, State Departments, and Congress. Just look at the Middle East, starting off with deposing the democratic government of Iran back, you know, was that
in the 50s?
Yeah,
54. And you can look at Central America as well. Or you could look at Hawaii before it became a state.
The drug smuggling in Africa.
Right.
So perhaps all the CIA and U.S. government action should be revealed. Have you read the book, The Brothers, by Stephen Kinzer?
I've not, no.
It is a fantastic book, but it shows the darkness.
Is it about the Dulles brothers?
American history. The Dulles brothers, yeah.
Yeah, Alan and...
George Foster. Is it George and Foster?
No, Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles, yeah. And I forget his brother's name.
So I think, America is ignorant to the darker side of CIA and State Department actions all over the world.
Well, I think we have a good sense of it, and I think this report is a great start. But, if we're not going to prosecute, then we should pardon. We need to clarify that crimes were committed, not just that, you know, we did things that we don't like, you know, this rectal feeding of these guys and stuff like that. It's not just that it was gross or horrible. There was one guy who died of hypothermia. He literally froze to death. He He was he was naked and handcuffed, shackled to the concrete floor in a metal cell, and he froze to death. He died of hypothermia. This is criminal. And if we're not going to send people to jail over it, or at least hold trials for it, we should at least assert positively this was criminal behavior, and we are intentionally going to pardon it because we can't successfully prosecute it. Rick, thank you for the call. Marianne in Taos, New Mexico, listening to KVOT. Hey, Marianne, what's up?
Yes. Hi, Tom. Long time, first time.
Thank you.
I really feel very adamant that they should be prosecuted. And the reason, I totally understand your reasoning that they should be pardoned. I understand why. But I feel that if they're prosecuted and all the crimes are brought out, there'll be a discussion started, not only with the Republicans and Democrats, but with the college students and with the high school students and with the public school children. And that what are we telling our children if we pardon these people?
I agree with you, Marianne. I absolutely agree. However, there is no one to do the prosecution, to the best of my knowledge. The Obama administration, they don't prosecute banksters. They don't prosecute war criminals. They basically, they're not going to do it. Congress certainly isn't going to do it.
What would be the difference between if they're prosecuted and everything is brought out, or if they're pardoned and everything is brought out?
I think the whole point of it is to have everything brought out. And that's what Dianne Feinstein and John McCain took the first step toward today. And the second step would be some sort of official action by the U.S. government to say, yes, this is true, this is horrible, and it's never going to happen again. And you can either prosecute these people or you can pardon them. Those are the only two legal options that I know
right.
of. And I just don't see a prosecution happening. President Obama could pardon them tomorrow, and it would be like marking them for the rest of their lives, for all of posterity, for all of history, as war criminals.
Right. But I just worry that, we're giving the wrong message, and our children are the future, whether they're in college. And I know it sounds very naive, but to be able to pardon these crimes is unfathomable.
Can you imagine, Marianne, if Bill Clinton, when he came into office, had issued a pardon against Ronald Reagan for secretly negotiating with the Shah of, with Ayatollah Khomeini's regime in Iran to hold the American hostages for an extra couple hundred days so that he could win the election, and then selling these people weapons to pay them off, and then using the money from those weapons to run guns into Central America, and then taking in exchange for those guns, taking drugs back up to North America and selling them in North America. All of that is pretty much on the record. If Bill Clinton had issued a pardon of Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush for that, there would be no debate about whether these crimes were committed. Right now, you'll find all kinds of Republicans who will say, oh, Hartman's just being paranoid.
Okay.
I mean, it puts it on the record.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we can say, okay, that guy, he wasn't such a great president. You want to deify Reagan, good luck. But, hey, how come he got pardoned? He must have been a criminal.
Well, yeah, I understand that. I understand what you're saying. And
Bush is going to get away with this the same way Reagan got away with what he did.
Yeah.
And
if
he's
prosecuted, even though they will not, they will not be indicted, it will start a conversation that will override. It will override all the lies that are going on now, and even to where it's trickling down to all of the violence that's going on right now in our society with our police, and all the children are being killed, and they're trying to
We have become a coarser and more brutal society as a consequence, in my opinion, of the Bush administration. And it's time for us to own up to that. Marianne, I'm sorry, we're out of time. Thank you for the call. I totally get it, and I would love to see a prosecution. I just don't think it's going to happen.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Just about an hour ago, the Democratic chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Dianne Feinstein, released a 500-and-change page, a little short of 600-page summary of a, was it 3,000 pages or 6,000 pages? 6,000-page report that the Senate Intelligence Committee put together, basically indicting the CIA and their contractors for committing crimes in the name of the United States and for, in some cases, actually lying to the Bush administration about how effective this was. On the other hand, I mean, you know, Dick Cheney's running around freaking out about this. Why? Because they some of the people that they tortured said, oh, yeah, Saddam Hussein, he's got weapons of mass destruction. Because people will tell you what you want them to, you know, what you want to hear. If you simply say, hey, you know, I want to know if Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. We think he might. You know, hold on just a second while I pour water down your throat. Yes, he does. Yes, he does. And then Cheney, you know, walks that over to Fox News and says, look at this. Look at this. I mean, the Bush administration used the phony intelligence that came out of torture to provide a rationale for invading Iraq. Which is nuts. I mean, that's a crime. The Washington Post has put together sort of a thought cloud from the Senate Select Committee, or the Senate Intelligence Committee. Here's the 20 key findings about CIA interrogations. It was not an effective means of acquiring intelligence. Bing! It rested on inaccurate claims of their ineffectiveness. These are actual quotes from the report. It was brutal and far worse than the CIA represented. The condition of confinement for CIA detainees were harsher. It repeatedly provided inaccurate information. It actively avoided or impeded congressional oversight. It impeded effective White House oversight. You can do it again. Yeah, sure. It complicated and in some cases impeded the national security missions. It impeded oversight by the CIA's Office of Inspector General. It coordinated the release of classified information to the media. These are quotes pulled together by the Washington Post. It was unprepared as it began operating. It was deeply flawed throughout the program's duration. They overwhelmingly outsourced operations, coercive interrogation techniques that had not been approved, did not conduct a comprehensive or accurate accounting of the number of individuals it detained, failed to adequately evaluate the effectiveness, rarely reprimanded or held personnel accountable, ignored numerous internal critiques, criticisms, and objections, was inherently unsustainable, and damaged the standing of the United States in the world. Thanks to the Washington Post for pulling that together. Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress, Igor Volsky, writing, the five most damning revelations from the CIA's report. Number one, torture did not stop a single terror attack. Not one. It's like we gave up our honor. We gave up our standing in the world. We gave up our reputation. In exchange for a desperate, fearful plea that terrorists wouldn't hit us again. Well, not one terrorist attack was stopped as a consequence of torture. And the CIA lied about this, which is Igor Volsky's number two from the Senate Intelligence Committee. The CIA lied about it to us. It lied about it to the media. It lied about it to the White House. As Senator John McCain, the Republican from Arizona, pointed out today. There was number three, not everyone approved of the torture policy. There's a huge debate inside the CIA about whether this was legal or not. Number four, the torture methods were far more brutal than originally reported. I mean, they come right out and lay out some of the details of this one guy who was chained in a cage and died of hypothermia. Rectal feeding, rectal hydration, not because it's medically necessary, but because it makes people compliant? Really? Keeping people from sleeping for a full week? This doesn't cause people to want to tell you what you need to know. It makes people insane. Torture doesn't work. In fact, the interrogations that led to the actionable intelligence that was used to find bin Laden and the interrogation of Mohammed Atta, or not Mohammed Atta, who's Sheikh Khalid Mohammed, the guy who was the mastermind of 9/11. When they first interrogated him, it was sitting down, being friendly, you know, normal FBI interrogation techniques, and he spilled the beans. And the CIA said, we'll take over from here. They started waterboarding the guy, and they got nothing. And number five, waterboarding caused physical harm. It's Saudi Arabia and Al-Qaeda linked Saudi citizen Abu Zubaydah became completely unresponsive with bubbles rising through his open, full mouth during one of the waterboardings. They drowned him and then brought him back. So what do we do about this? What do we do about this? I want to just, you know, one more time play this clip of Hillary Clinton telling the story to Congress. This is when she was Senator Clinton. And the president was George W. Bush. And she was speaking out against torture. And this is what she had to say.
When General Washington led his soldiers across the Delaware River and onto victory in the Battle of Trenton, he captured nearly 1,000 foreign mercenaries, and he faced a crucial choice. How would General Washington treat these prisoners? The British had already committed atrocities against Americans, including torture. As David Hackett Fisher describes in his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Washington's Crossing, thousands of American prisoners of war were treated with extreme cruelty by British captors. There are accounts of injured soldiers who surrendered being murdered instead of quartered. Countless Americans dying in prison hulks in New York Harbor. Starvation and other acts of inhumanity perpetrated against Americans confined to churches in New York City. Well, you can imagine, the light of our ideals shone dimly in those early dark days, years from an end to the conflict, years before our improbable triumph and the birth of our democracy. General Washington announced a decision unique in human history, sending the following order for handling prisoners. Treat them with humanity and let them have no reason to complain of our copying the brutal example of the British Army in their treatment of our unfortunate brethren. George Washington understood that how you treat enemy combatants can reverberate around the world. We must convict and punish the guilty in a way that reinforces their guilt before the world and does not undermine our values.
Now, you could say, well, you know, George Washington, that's all well and good, but he held slaves, didn't he? Yeah. And that debate also happened in the United States, and it led right to the Civil War. John Adams' son, John Quincy Adams, after he was president of the United States, ran for election to the House of Representatives specifically so that he could talk about slavery every single day in the 1830s, as I recall. Every day, because Congress had passed a law saying we're not going to debate slavery. So yes, we commit, we have, as a nation, and our presidents have committed horrors, crimes. We need to acknowledge them. If we're going to acknowledge George W. Bush's crimes, we either need to prosecute him or we need to pardon him. I don't think the former is going to happen, so the latter should happen today.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with your thoughts on my thoughts, on Anthony Romero's thoughts on this topic. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Jim, watching Free Speech TV in Concord, North Carolina. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, I really like the idea, your idea about the pardon, but listening a little earlier, I thought, wow, you just mentioned Guantanamo. So I was thinking, do you think the president could link the two? In other words, go to McConnell, go to Boehner and say, let me close Guantanamo. Let me close it right now so that we can have a little bit of a little bit of something to give to the world. Like, okay, we see our mistakes. We're doing this.
Right.
Go to McConnell and Boehner and say, I'll close Guantanamo and I won't prosecute. I'll pardon Bush and Cheney. But if you don't let me close Guantanamo, I'm going to have to send this to the Justice Department.
The problem is that both Boehner and McConnell are savvy enough politicians that they know that that's an empty threat and that the president isn't going to make a threat that he's not going to keep, and he wouldn't be able to keep that. It would blow up in his face so badly. It would hurt him. If he were to prosecute, actually have a prosecution of Bush and Cheney for this, it would blow up in his face politically and in the Democratic Party's face. I believe, I may be wrong, but I think that it would blow up the same way that the Republican impeachment efforts against Bill Clinton blew up in their face. It actually hurt the Republican Party.
Yeah.
I don't think he can use it as a political bargaining chip. I don't think he should. I think he needs to lay out an indictment and then say, and based on these crimes that we have listed in this indictment, we are issuing a full and complete pardon.
Nice. Well, you know, just thought I'd try to link them, but...
Right. The indictment becomes part of the historical record. George W. Bush's history for all of posterity. I mean, if John Adams was our first president who was not a slaveholder, he was our second president. Now, John Adams was not, like, passionately anti-slavery. He was just from the North. He was from Massachusetts where slavery was not practiced and was not legal. But his son was fanatic against slavery. But John Adams was... like that, you know, well, we'll try to keep the republic together. But if he had issued a pardon to George Washington for being a slave owner or something like that, although, you know, it wasn't a crime at that time. But if he had, or had there been, you know, I mean, it's like Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon's legacy is, even though he's long gone, is never going to escape the fact that Gerald Ford acknowledged Richard Nixon's crimes, acknowledged them in that pardon. And, you know, arguably, I mean, there was a lesser pardon. George Herbert Walker Bush pardoned over 100 members of the Reagan administration. Cap Weinberger was probably the most prominent of them. But, you know, he pardoned a whole bunch of people when Reagan was on the way out. But he didn't pardon Reagan. And because he just, you know, there was never going to be a prosecution of Reagan. There should have been a pardon for Reagan. And it should have been issued by Bill Clinton. You know, at that point, Reagan was already well into, he was dying of Alzheimer's. You know, pardon the guy. Put it on the record so that his record will be like Nixon's record and nobody will ever be able to shine and polish it and pretend that it didn't happen. That's my point.
So what do you think the chances are that he'll actually do it?
I think it's probably around 5 or 10%. But I think if enough of us push and enough of us argue for it and suggest it, and I think, you know, just even making it, Jim, thank you for the call, just even making it a topic of discussion, you know, if I can push it enough here, if it then pops up on television and then moves into the newspapers, I mean, you know, this just the very idea that Bush and Cheney committed crimes is a conversation that America needs to have. We'll be back 20 minutes past the hour. 20 minutes past the hour, the place where smart people get the news, the Tom Hartman Program. Rick in Las Vegas. Hey, Rick, you wanted to weigh in on this?
Yeah, in regards to the discussion you had with prosecuting the Bush presidency,
right.
when government officials need to be prosecuted for crimes, in the most recent years, the president will come up, the current president will come up and say, well, we want to look forwards, not backwards.
Yeah.
But when someone like yourself or myself should be standing in front of a judge in a courtroom for a crime that was repeated, that was committed in the past, and my lawyer stood up and said, we don't want to look backwards, we want to look forwards, the judge would look at him and say, are you insane?
Right.
All crimes that stand before my bench are in the past.
No, you're pointing out the inherent illogic of President Obama saying that he doesn't want to really know about the crimes of the Bush administration, doesn't want to prosecute them. The real reason he's saying that is what I said earlier, that the prosecution of Bill Clinton for lying about having sex with Monica Lewinsky blew up the Republican Party. It harmed the Republican Party tremendously because they tried to prosecute, you know, Bill Clinton. President Obama was to try to actually prosecute George W. Bush, it would be unprecedented. No president has ever been prosecuted after he's left office in the United States. It would arguably provoke a constitutional crisis of massive proportions, and it would backfire on him politically. But if he were to issue a pardon, it puts it on the record, and nobody can ever dispute the fact that, yep, George W. Bush was a war criminal. It's part of the record. And that's my goal for it. Yeah. And so I encourage people to call the White House. Thank you, Rick, for the call. What's the White House switchboard number? Isn't it 202-456-1111. 202-456-1111. I need to write that down in front of me here. William in Chicago, listening on CPT. Hey, William, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I love your program. I disagree with a lot of things you say, but nonetheless, I listen to you every day.
Thank you.
So keep on doing what you're doing. I think here, though, your chances of anything happening are zero to negative 100, because what's the Obama administration doing right now but using drones to kill people? I mean, they're not even capturing them to torture them, which, you know, I don't think anyone with a head on their shoulders agrees with. All you have to do is listen to John McCain and know his story and know that he didn't give them any information or wrong information. But what's going on right now with the Obama administration with the drones, as you well know, they're not even trying to capture anyone. They're killing people. So I don't see how.
I could try to make a defense of the Obama drone program, you know, that it's gotten tighter, it's more well regulated, it's less, you know, but. It's less likely to blow up civilians. But at the end of the day, I can't defend the drone program. I just can't. You know, maybe in a battlefield situation in Afghanistan or Iraq, but dropping drones in Pakistan or Yemen, without due cause, without judicial process, you know, I believe is a crime also. And so that's something else that has to be dealt with in another venue through some other means, because that's this administration. But that doesn't mean that this administration can't pardon the previous administration and then leave it to the next president to pardon Obama, if that's what it takes. William, thank you for the call. Gypsy in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Gypsy, what's up?
Oh, I'm now in Tennessee, Tom.
Okay.
I'm almost, well, I can't say that I'm almost persuaded. I am not persuaded at all by this argument.
For a pardon.
The progressive side has this annoying tendency to capitulate at the first sign of, well, we can't get what we want.
Right.
So instead of going for what we should be pushing for, we're going to accept this token lesser thing. A pardon is going to be, it's not a finding of fact, it's a statement of opinion. And once that opinion has been stated, they can never be prosecuted for any
of
it.
It's actually an assertion of fact, and the pardon can be very specific for the specific crimes, or it can be very, very general. And, you know, typically pardons, like when George Herbert Walker Bush pardoned Cap Weinberger and 100 other Reagan officials, they were broad pardons that covered everything. When Jerry Ford pardoned Richard Nixon, he pardoned him for every crime he ever might have committed in his life. Because Richard Nixon was, I mean, literally, when he was vice president in the Eisenhower White House, he was taking $500,000 in a suitcase from the Dairy Council and another one from Jimmy Hoffa. I mean, you know, it's just He was so corrupt. So Jerry Ford pardoned him for everything. But you can make a pardon very specific, and you can attach to it a bill of particulars that's essentially a prosecutor's brief. So I don't think it's that weak.
I do understand that, but the problem is that once they have been pardoned, they can never be prosecuted.
Correct.
Why should we first go for let them completely off the hook?
Well, Gypsy, you're not letting them completely off the hook. You're letting them off the hook in the United States. If the United States was to sign the International Convention on Crimes of War, whatever it is, the ICC, the International Criminal Court, if we were to sign that treaty, all these Bush administration officials would be subject to prosecution in The Hague.
That would be very unlikely, given that we've not signed it.
Well, that's my point. There's the whole any scenario you can come up with which involves prosecution of Bush, Cheney, you, Bybee, you know, any of these guys is more unlikely than the scenario of a pardon.
I do agree that it's very unlikely, but should we not be pushing for what needs to be done rather than accepting, well, we're not going to get that anyway? He can pardon them on his very last day in office.
You're right. Yeah, I would love to see it. Yes, I think we should be pushing for it. On the other hand, it's not going to happen. I'll just tell you. Gypsy, thank you for the call. It's not going to happen, so let's make something happen that can.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
We could even, you know, position this as if it was coming from the Republicans. You know, we would like a pardon for President Bush and his buddies, please. The bad and the very, very highly ugly, the good. John Legend. Over the weekend, the singer and his wife, Christy Teigen, went out of their way to show their support for protesters demonstrating against the Eric Garner grand jury decision not to indict the police. According to Vanity Fair, they hired a group of food trucks, which were then sent to feed a bunch of hungry protesters gathered in New York City's Lincoln Square. Kimchi tacos and protests? Now, that's what I call a movement. Tag John and Chrissy, you're it. The bad, Jeanine Pirro. During a question and answer segment on her show this weekend, the Fox so-called news host agreed with a viewer that the real takeaway from the death of Eric Garner is that everyday people need to learn to be nicer to the police. Serious, check it out.
Larry says no, enough is enough. The general public needs to be trained to be more sensitive to the police and show them the respect they deserve.
I agree.
Really? A cop just got away with killing an unarmed man for the crime of selling loose cigarettes, and your takeaway is that some people need to show respect? Unbelievable. And the very, very ugly Charles C. Johnson. The conservative Twitter commentator is under fire this week for releasing what he says is the real identity of Jackie, the woman whose alleged rape was the subject of a controversial Rolling Stone piece about rape culture at the University of Virginia. Johnson's move came just days after Rolling Stone released a statement saying that it found discrepancies in Jackie's story about the night of the attack. Now, we still don't know if Jackie's real identity has been compromised, but that's almost beside the point. Exposing the identity of a rape victim, regardless of whether or not her story adds up, is simply wrong and very, very ugly. Astonishing. So, let me get over here. It's I was talking to Louise during the break, and she said, everybody on Twitter is trashing you for calling for a pardon for George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Anthony Romero, who is the president of the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, wrote this op-ed. Is his title president? Executive director of the ACLU. Wrote an op-ed in which he said, you know, we need to pardon these guys. Because we're not going to prosecute them. You know, let's just get this done with. Let's get it on the record that they're criminals. And I absolutely agree with this sentiment. He said, the spectacle of the president's granting pardons to torturers still makes my stomach turn. But doing so may be the only way to ensure that the American government never tortures again. Pardons would make clear that crimes were committed, that the individuals who authorized and committed torture were indeed criminals. It'd be Bush, Cheney, Bybee, you, Rumsfeld, Rice, Gonzalez, I mean, the list goes on. That the individuals who authorized and committed torture were indeed criminals, and the future architects and perpetrators of torture should beware. I agree. So let me get back here to Twitter. Yeah, people are saying, no, wait a minute, you need to put them in jail. Also, the contractors and agents who lied to carry them out. This is from Monkey Wrench. Lakeside Liberal says, prosecute Cheney, Bush and Cheney, and anyone involved in torture. Apologists and false equivocators, deal with it. Yeah, I'm not apologizing for these guys. I'm telling you, the Obama administration is not going to be able to prosecute them. There are too many political obstacles to it. And probably a fair number of legal obstacles to it. Don't panic, 1962, says CIA thrown under the bus could unravel and affect 2016 elections. Obama's drone in a war zone were illegal, but not equal to waterboarding. Okay, that's kind of a nuanced. Go Lee, well said, Tom Harbin. Torture doesn't cause people to want to tell you what you need to know. It makes people insane. Oh, thank you. And on it goes. And, of course, a vigorous discussion of this over in our chat room. Eddie Torres, quoting Christopher Ingraham at the Washington Post, most Americans are fine with torture even when you call it torture. That's sad. Bell and Issaquah, apparently once a president leaves office who no longer is covered by the non-prosecution clause of a president, they weren't sure if an indictment after Nixon's resignation would go forward, so Ford pardoned rather than let Nixon face a trial. That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. So, anyway, back to your calls. Stanley in Tyler, Texas. Hey, Stanley.
Hello. How are you doing today?
I am great, but I'll get better. I hope the same is true for you.
Yeah. It's been a very interesting conversation today.
Yes, I agree.
My immediate response to your reading of that opinion was, no, but I've been listening to you, and it's possible that you're changing my mind. Let me run over a couple things real quick.
Sure.
First off, on the no side, this propagates the meme that the law does not apply to the lawmakers, that they're a class of people above the law, i.e. New York City, Ferguson cops, politicians, presidents, senators.
I would agree, but I would assert that not pardoning them and not even addressing the issue, it goes a whole lot farther in implicit and functionally explicit ratification of what they did, approval of what they did, as opposed to a pardon at least brands them as criminals. They will never escape that mark.
That is what I am trying to digest, because that is a very interesting concept right there.
Yeah.
The idea that you could brand them, although it really never hurt Nixon.
Oh, it hurt Nixon horribly. Nixon, until David Snow, am I remembering his name right? The guy who did the long form interview with him that they ultimately made him, David Frost.
Frost.
Something that had to do with cold stuff. David Frost did his long form interview with Nixon, nobody even wanted to talk to the guy. I mean, he was a pariah. Richard Nixon, went to his death basically reviled by the American people. And Gerry Ford's pardon was a big piece of that.
That's true.
So
like I said, it's very interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah, I think Anthony Romero is brilliant in this. This is not my idea. This is his. He wrote an op-ed in today's New York Times titled Pardon Bush and Those Who Torture. And I think it's solid. Stanley, I got to move along, but thank you for your call and your thoughtful response. Bob in Farmington, Missouri. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I agree and I disagree with you. A lot of your logic is really sound, and they are definitely criminals, and they should be branded as criminals. But here's the thing. I can't go along with anyone torturing people. People should not be tortured. Animals should not be tortured. Nothing should be tortured. And when George Bush said it was okay for the CIA to torture people, everybody from the Marines, the Army, from the lowest private to the highest general, to the lowest ranking deputy at St. Francis County, Missouri jail, decided that they didn't have to listen to the rules either. And we're not going to get it under control until we start prosecuting somebody.
You know, you make a strong argument, and I can't disagree with that argument. It's the argument also for prosecuting the police officers, and you know, from Ferguson to Staten Island, et cetera. It's a strong argument. That said, there's not going to be a prosecution of George W. Bush. I can just tell you that. I mean, this is a simple fact. It's not going to happen in Congress. It's controlled by Republicans. And it's not going to happen in the Justice Department. It would become so political so quickly and would immediately lead to impeachment proceedings against President Obama. Proceedings that, I mean, it would blow up everything else and deflect all the attention away from the crimes that were committed by these guys and toward President Obama doing something that no president had ever done before, which is prosecute the previous president. It's never been done before. And it just, you know, politically this would blow up in his face if he did it. And frankly, politically, it would blow up in his face in a way that legally, practically would make it impossible, in my opinion. Now, I might be wrong. And, you know, if you can find somebody who, you know, really has a good understanding of how politics works in this town, who can lay out a scenario under which the Bush administration officials from the president on down who participated in this crime, this torture crime, can be prosecuted, I'd love to hear it. Do you know a way?
How about this, Tom? How about this? Go ahead and lay out the bill of particulars.
Right.
And instead of issuing a pardon, issue an unpardon. Do it very, very publicly. Tell them, you did this, and if we can find a way, we will prosecute you.
Well, essentially, that's what the Senate just did without the last sentence. And you know, Dianne Feinstein laid it out in chilling detail. And then John McCain came out and said, yeah, you know, she's right. And this was wrong. And we shouldn't have done this. I mean, the one guy in Congress who has actually been tortured said this is wrong. Bob, thank you for the call. Interesting conversation we're having. How do you deal with a previous president of the United States who is clearly a war criminal? How do you deal with that? It's a tough one. It's a really tough one. How do you deal with it legally? How do you deal with it politically? How do you deal with it morally?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
My point, and I think Anthony Romero's point about the pardon, isn't that you just give them a get-out-of-jail-free card. It's that you brand them as criminals. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Will in Los Angeles, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Will, what's up?
Yes, hi, Tom. I'm enjoying your history lesson for the day.
Thank you.
But I agree with you. And I would just like to say a side lesson from the history lesson today. As you're speaking of the past crimes of Reagan, father and son Bush, it explains to me why no one in this country should have been surprised at the lack of indictments in the police abuse cases.
Right.
And the reason is because just what you're saying about the crimes of the presidents. The police, the DAs, and the grand juries understand the rules of the club.
Right.
And they do not want to step out of the box. So therefore, they understand we just will not talk about it. We'll block evidence, which is what the DAs did in Ferguson, by introducing something that's out of date, a law that's no longer in existence.
Right.
Well, it just seems to me that you've explained what's going on as far as police abuse.
Yeah, it's a variation on Ben Franklin's old truism that a fish rots from the head down. You know, it's like when the President of the United States engages in criminal act, when the President of the United States endorses torture, then it's only a small step for a local police officer to torture people or to kill people for that matter, and to be held on not to be held to account.
So, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, a pardon implies a conviction. It implies a crime. So, anyhow, Will, thank you for the call, and thank you for your thoughts on this. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Hartman. I am not standing up for George Bush or Dick Cheney, whom I dislike very much. But about the Wild Wild West days, first, were white Americans actually paid to bring in the scalps of Native Americans for money? And second, if that happened, who were the presidents that were the head of office when or if that happened?
Yes, they were, and to the best of my knowledge, it happened from the Jefferson administration through the Lincoln administration, and perhaps after that.
You could bring in the scalp of a human being.
That's correct.
Paid.
That's correct.
That's wild, man.
I know.
And that's crazy.
I know. We talk about slavery all the time. We very rarely talk about the genocide against Native Americans, and it was horror. It was a horror. It was right up there with what Hitler did. I mean, you know, to try to exterminate an entire race of people. And that blood is on our hands, and I think it echoes down to this very day. It's part of the ongoing brutality of this country that we need to awaken ourselves from and shake off. But I believe it was under President, which president? Maybe it was Polk. I think it was one of the presidents before Lincoln, who authorized the sending of smallpox-infected blankets into Ohio to a Native American tribe. And it might have been Andrew Jackson.
Right. And that was the first example of chemical warfare.
Biological warfare,
right?
Well, it wasn't the first example. It had been done by the Romans. But, yeah, I mean, you know, in the United States, as far as I know. So, yeah, pretty awful stuff. Michael, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. We'll be back 10 minutes before the hour. Before the hour, welcome back. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give a goat to help a returning slave in South Sudan, and free-don.org. Don Siegelman will be before a jury or before a judge on the 15th of this month.
Is it the 15th? I thought it was the 13th.
I think it's the 15th.
Okay.
But anyhow, Ellen Ratner. Hey, Ellen.
Thank you so much. And just want to remind people, these hearts are available, too, at
Goats for the Old Goat.
That's right. We'll be pushing the hearts. Okay. So, what I want to say is that there's obviously the torture report that's taking all the air out of everything. But as you know, there has been today a oversight committee, a Daryl Issa's committee, with Elijah Cummings as the minority member. And, this took place this morning around 9:30 in the morning. And they put on the stand or whatever, they put in the witness box, I guess it's a table, Mr. Gruber. Gruber said that he talked about working for both Romney and Obama. He said he did not ever draft either legislation for either the president or for Romney. He said he ran micro simulation models to help those in the state and federal and executive branches, is what he also said. He also said he felt bad about the videos that showed his comments. However, that they omitted those videos when they showed his comments, the questions that he had about tax credits for people and whether the government could actually run these exchanges. So we only heard, you know, in the Gruber, anti-Gruber remarks that the right is running, we didn't hear the full story. Surprise!
So Fox News edited Gruber the same way that James O'Keefe edited the Acorn.
Well, everybody else did, yes, yeah. For sure. Okay, now there's a couple other interesting things, and one is that in January, actually January 24th, it is interesting that Chris Christie is going to go out to Steve King's seminar that he is doing in all places, of course, Iowa. And this is also somewhat sponsored by Citizens United, who announced part of his participation.
Steve King, of course, is a congressman from Iowa.
And actually, I have to say, he's a friend of mine. We argue about absolutely everything.
He's been on the show a number of times.
Yeah, he's an interesting character.
Right-wing wackadoodle, but he's a...
Nice wackadoodle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he'll have a conversation
with him. And I tell him he's a wackadoodle. Yeah. So... the other star players at this conference, besides Chris Christie, who's obviously looking at his base, looking to run for president, is Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, Sarah Palin, and Mike Lee of Utah.
None of them have a chance.
No, they're not running. I think the person that's running is Christie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think he's kissing up to the right.
Oh,
in
yeah.
Iowa.
Right now it's Christie, Jeb Bush, and Mitt Romney. And that's.
And as I think I've said to you, I was on a train with two Republican members of Congress, and I said to them, who are you guys going to put up? This is about 4 months ago. Jeb Bush, they said.
Yeah, of course.
So that's who the establishment's going for.
Absolutely. And they're trying to get it all their ducks in order so that there's basically no Republican primary because the last one worked out so badly for Romney.
Okay, now, one other interesting thing. Well, there's a lot of interesting things, but let's go with this torture report. Hmm. And first of all, I want to commend John McCain. He got up and he basically went for that torture report in a very positive way. And he basically said it is un-American. He didn't say it in those words to do torture. He said there's no way that waterboarding is acceptable. It was around 12:30 today, Eastern Standard Time. And he was, I've never heard him like that.
Yeah,
honestly.
We played some clips from it here.
I was pretty impressed.
And he's the only member of Congress who has the moral standing to say such things.
That's right.
Because he's the only guy who was
tortured.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Who was a POW.
Exactly. So there's some issues around the torture report. One is also two psychologists who had recommended waterboarding later started their own little company. They have not, as we far as we know, and I may have been missing this on the internet, they have not been chastised by the American Psychological Association. I don't know if they're still members.
Have they been identified?
Oh, they were identified, yes. In the report, they're identified by a fake name, but actually, everybody knows who they are.
Oh, interesting. And these are the guys who Dianne Feinstein said on the floor of the Senate this morning went on to get another $80 million in contracts.
That's right. Exactly. Right. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. And they had a company. I guess it's been disintegrated now, the company. But where are they in terms of the American Psychological Association? Because the American Psychological Association and American Medical Association do not approve of physicians with torture or, I think, actually at the death penalty.
Right. So, well, where they are is they got $80 million from the government. So they're
right.
sitting on the beach in the Caymans. You know?
I think so. Also, I just got an interesting note from Bob Ney. Now, Bob Ney is out of the country right now. He'll be back with us next week. And he said he wants to know, and I didn't have time because literally I got this right before I came on air with you. He wants to know if Alice Fisher is mentioned in this report. Now, Alice Fisher is the prosecutor that went after Bob Ney. But apparently she also worked for Gonzalez. She was involved in some of this torture business. Hmm. And after she went after, a lot of people, not a lot, but some people objected to her being appointed to her position at Justice Department. And then when she went after Bob Ney, they gave her that position. So there, we will do a word search and see if she's mentioned in this report.
So her going after Bob Ney was the political price of her climbing the ladder?
That's exactly right.
Wow.
That's exactly right. And apparently she was involved in some of this torture cover-up, et cetera.
Keep us up to date on that.
I certainly will. Okay. Also, our friendly neighborhood doctor, psychiatrist Jim McDermott, congressman, he is very concerned about the Iraq and Syria strategy. He would like the president to come and explain to Congress his strategy for that. He does not feel like the strategy was explained and has been explained, and he wants to know why the president is doing what he is actually doing.
Well, that'll happen when you get a new Secretary of Defense, I'm guessing.
We'll see who the Secretary of Defense is, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
But my point is that I think, you know, with Hagel on the way out, that's probably not going to be happening any day soon, even though McDermott is a Democrat and he's got good cred.
Right. Also, it's interesting. Some of our friends at the Left Institute for Public Accuracy have been putting Ray McGovern on. He's a CIA analyst, and he thinks what we had done was terrible.
Wow. Ray McGovern. I should get it back on the program. He's been on both our radio and TV shows a number of times. Brilliant. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Great to see you. We'll be back. Actually, we'll be back with Kyle Ash, the Greenpeace, and we'll continue our conversation about pardoning George Bush. So after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And while this is, you know, we've been talking about this whole torture circus and what we should do about the torturers and, you know, Bush and Cheney and all these guys. And we will get back to that conversation. But in the midst of this, down in Lima, Peru, the UN is holding a climate conference, the U.S. The UN climate talks in Peru. And Kyle Ash is down there with Greenpeace International. Greenpeace.org is the website. And Kyle, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. You're there in Peru. How's the conference going? What's going on? This is an existential threat. We're looking at the possible extinction of the human race. Is that being discussed at all?
I don't think it's been put in such dire terms. That's one of the reasons we're here, is to try and shine a light on the problem a little bit more. I think that a lot of delegates come to Peru, to this climate conference, thinking of it as a step towards Paris. But obviously we can make some very important decisions here. And I think we will. I mean, overall, the attitude is pretty positive.
Mm-hmm.
The main things they need to discuss basically and determine is what will be in the Paris Agreement, what are some criteria for countries' intended contributions, as in what commitments will they make that will be included in the Paris Agreement, how can we assess all of them so that they're using the same criteria.
Yeah.
And then the third topic, of course, is closing the gap on the fact that the 2020 targets are so weak, to try and figure out how to deal with that.
Right. So the Paris Accords, or the Paris meeting, is going to be basically about 4 or 5 months from now, isn't it? Isn't it March of 2016 or 2015?
It's the next year, actually. So this is the annual climate conference.
Right. But next year starts in 3 weeks.
In November next year, yeah.
So it's going to be in November of next year.
Specific dates on the UN website typically starts around the first week of December or last week of November.
Oh, okay. So it's basically a year from now. For some reason, I had it stuck in my head that it was happening in the spring.
One thing that might be stuck in your head is because the U.S. had said that they would put down their 2025 target by March.
I see.
But they already did it, as you know, in a joint statement with China.
Right, right. So is the... Is what's going to be laid out in a year from now in Paris, the big meeting, is that being hammered out right now in detail, or are these broad roadmaps, you know, statements of principle kind of things?
There's a preamble text, yeah, that kind of wordy language that they need to figure out what principles they agree on. But they're also basically putting down options that countries insist on being considered for being in the treaty. So it's what people want to be negotiated over the next year. So you're seeing different proposals on what should be in the treaty on measuring emission targets and things like that. Right. So it's,
Are there any
over the next year?
Any conspicuous heroes or bad guys here? Are there any countries that are really, really aggressively working toward a climate solution, and any countries who are aggressively trying to obstruct that movement?
There's none that stick out as being obstacles that haven't typically been. We have some ongoing problems, like the U.S. Very insistent on not having the most important parts of the Paris Agreement being legally binding, so that, for instance, the mitigation commitments, the commitments to reduce carbon pollution would not be in the part of the agreement that's legally binding. Obviously, that's problematic.
Right.
But a lot of countries have been sort of hiding behind that. They'd be perfectly happy to have that be the case, because then there's less pressure on them to do that, to achieve those targets at home. But on the other hand, Greenpeace very much supports the 2025 end date, which is the U.S. position.
Mm-hmm.
So we're helping the U.S. push for that 2025 date as being the target for the post-2020 pollution targets. Many countries want to have it be further out.
Sure.
We don't want to lock in low ambition.
Right. That's marvelous. That's absolutely marvelous.
Yeah.
Kyle Ash with the with Greenpeace.org. Anything that we're missing here, Kyle?
There's a lot to talk about. I think that the short-term issues are very problematic. Closing the gap. I mean, we're talking about a 2015 treaty with 2025 targets.
Right.
What we have on the table already for 2020 is clearly not enough, and they need to figure out how to deal with that. And one of the ways they can deal with it is by reducing fossil fuel subsidies, basically taking away bad policies.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll have some good signals on that here in Lima.
That would be great, particularly if it came from the UN and then went to the U.S. Senate and House, although, you know, given the recent elections, I'm not optimistic about that. But who knows? Who knows? Kyle Ash with Greenpeace, greenpeace.org. Thank you, Kyle.
Yep, thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you. We'll, So back to our torture topic here. Bob in Sherman Oaks, California. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. If you give me a few minutes, I'd like to take you through a standardized history of what's gone on in America. It started with Cortez and DeSoto, people that I'm 75. I thought we my heroes, only to find out that they used to have contests on how quickly they could have a competition, how fast they could chop the natives that they found in half and other such things. They took souvenirs and made necklaces out of ears. I'd like to jump forward to something that no one has ever talked about in detail. We think of the Vietnam War as having one terrible incident, My Lai, when in fact the Toledo Blade newspaper finally investigated what the Army had investigated, which was the Tiger Force.
Right.
From the Army, which were assigned for 7 months to travel through Vietnam and do exactly, on purpose, the slaughter of hundreds of peasants in all kinds of hamlets. The Army carried on an investigation for 4.5 years and then dropped it.
Right.
The Toledo Blade picked this up in 2000 or 2003, I'm not sure of the exact dates, and decided to investigate it, did hundreds of interviews, and it would be wonderful if you would get people that were involved in this to discuss those kinds of war crimes. I'll just jump real quickly over Curtis LeMay and firebombing in Tokyo, where 140,000 people were killed in one night, not by the atom bomb, but by firebombing, where the streets, where if you went into a bomb shelter, the streets, the oxygen would be sucked out, and when you left the bomb shelter, the streets would be so.
No, Tokyo and Japan and Dresden and Germany were reduced to ruins by firebombing. It was as effective, in fact, arguably more effective than the nuclear bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, in terms of
killing. The last thing,
yeah.
Obama cannot investigate what's going on or accept it because the vice president of Afghanistan, who John Kerry is standing up and saying, we finally have a government in Afghanistan that we can work with and believes in our values. Abdul Dotsum, who is the head of the Northern Alliance, the primary army we say we're fighting our war, is responsible for the convoy of death, which you have probably heard about. And that is when 2,000 to 4,000Taliban or militants came with, were told that if they came and surrendered their weapons, they would be free. Instead, they were put into airless metal truck containers, somewhere about 12. So 2,000 to 4,000 arrived at, I don't know the name, the Shebigan or Obdigan prison that Dotson was in control of in the north. He was a warlord in the north who used rape to control the area. These people traveled for days in 120-degree weather, and when they got there, two or three per truck were still alive. The red had, the rest had...
Yeah. I got it, buddy. I got it. Thank you very much for the call. It's quarter after one.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your thoughts. Should George W. Bush be pardoned and thus branded a war criminal? And welcome back. Scott in Canaan, Maine. You want to disagree with me, Scott?
Yeah, Tom. How you doing? I haven't listened to you in a while. I've actually just picked you back up. I couldn't find you for a while. But I needed to disagree with you because what is going on right now, your attitude is exactly what happened pretty much when Obama got elected. The country was hungry to kill Bush. We all knew that he was a criminal, and we were waiting on it.
Yeah, let's not use words like kill, huh?
Well, Pelosi said, we're not going to do it, you know, and Obama said, you know, we need to move forward.
Right.
You can't really go forward until you know where you've been. That's my way of looking at it.
Well, that's my whole point here, Scott. If the president were to issue an indictment, a bill of particulars, saying here are the crimes that were committed by these people, and then at the end of that say, and therefore I'm granting them a pardon for these crimes, those people would be basically branded on the forehead for the rest of their lives and for all posterity in history as war criminals, and he wouldn't have to engage in any long, drawn-out, and highly politicized process, like either A, having the Justice Department, you know, convene a prosecution, B, having some kind of special prosecutor, which I believe would have to be authorized by Congress, or C, trying to get Congress involved when they're absolutely not going to do this. It's, you know, we now have a Republican-controlled Congress. So how better
I think the prosecution of him wouldn't be a problem. Did you shut me off?
No, I didn't. You're still on there.
Okay. No, I don't think the prosecution of it would be a problem because the people know it. We know that he's a criminal. Him and Cheney, Rumsfeld, we know it. You know, the whole country knows it. So prosecuting it wouldn't be a big issue. How they did it may be an issue, special prosecutor or whatever. But if all you do is pardoning, he still gets his pension. He still gets to live on just like he never did anything wrong. You know,
but see,
I want to talk to him
without the pardon, there's going to be no prosecution. You know that, don't you, Scott?
On a pension, he'll still be getting all of the other things.
He's still going to get that stuff.
Pardon is just going to be a small little mention.
No, it's not. You know, having been pardoned for war crimes, that's huge.
Yeah, to who?
To history.
To
the nation.
That attitude is why we're never going to hold the presidency or the Senate or the House again.
Pardon is a form of holding people accountable.
We refuse to do what needs to be done.
Okay, so Scott, what's the scenario that you're proposing as an alternative to what I'm proposing? Because what I'm proposing, the president could do this afternoon. What are you suggesting? Where does it begin? Where?
It starts with what he did. He's already admitted.
Okay, who's going to prosecute Bush?
He's done multiple interviews.
Who's going to prosecute Bush?
But I guess a special prosecutor. That's what they had to do with.
A special prosecutor has to be authorized by Congress. Do you really think that the Republican-controlled House and the Republican-controlled Senate are going to vote to authorize and fund a special prosecutor?
What he's done is it's so insignificant that it does deserve not to be prosecuted?
I fully believe that he deserves to be prosecuted. I'm just saying the political reality is that the Republican Party will never hold him to account. This president has an opportunity to, essentially with an executive order, which is a pardon, you know, all by himself, without a single word of approval from Congress or anybody else, He can, you know, with the stroke of a pen, he can brand Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, all these guys as war criminals for the rest of their lives and for all of history. And if he doesn't, frankly, I don't think anything is going to happen. Scott, thank you for the call. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Mark in Chico, California. Hey, Mark, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am fine, thank you. And I hope you are, too.
I'm doing good. What is it going to take in America to prosecute a president?
I think there's a fairly easy answer for that, Mark. We saw this in 1973. It's going to take a president whose crimes are acknowledged right across the board by Americans, whose crimes are acknowledged by Congress on a bipartisan basis, both parties, and you will not find a Republican who will acknowledge that George W. Bush committed these as crimes. Maybe John McCain, but I doubt he'll even go to Bush is responsible. He wants to blame some flunky at the CIA or a contractor. It's going to take, the American people right across the board saying, yes, this guy's a crook. And then B, it's going to take a bipartisan act of Congress. I mean, the Church Commission, Congress and the Sam Ervin's committee, anybody old enough to remember 1973, there was the country came together around trying to find out what happened in the Nixon administration and then, basically prosecuting the guy. And Jerry Ford came in and pardoned him to stop that prosecution. I mean, there was going to be a prosecution of Richard Nixon. There's no doubt about it. Jerry Ford stopped it. There's not going to be a prosecution of George W. Bush. It's not going to happen. The consensus, the national consensus, doesn't exist. The huge right-wing echo chamber that we've got in the United States that's feeding all those people down in the red states where, in the entire state of Mississippi, there's not one radio station that carries progressive talk radio or any kind of rational talk radio. It's all conservative. And the only news that people get basically is Fox News. I mean, this entire right-wing infrastructure did not exist in 1973. And so it was possible for us to have a national dialogue about crimes committed by a Republican president that just focused on the crimes. Now it immediately goes to politics and conspiracy and all this other nonsense. So that's an answer to your question, Mark. That's what it's going to take to prosecute a president. And we don't have that right here right now.
But, Tom, I mean, eventually these people.
I'm listening.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Eventually, the president down the line will figure out, well, nobody's ever been prosecuted, so I can go a step further and it will continue until somebody gets prosecuted for war crimes that the whole world knows what's happening. They look at us as not the beacon of light, on the hill anymore, because we do not hold our leaders responsible for their crimes. And it's just going to, just like it's gone into what Edward Snowden has done by releasing that we're being wiretapped and everything. I mean, where does it stop? I just don't get it.
It's the beginning of the process of stopping it is branding somebody, is identifying somebody, is putting the mark on George W. Bush's forehead for the rest of his life. War criminal, W, right? That's what the W stands for. That's the beginning of the process in my mind. Wouldn't it be, I think, appropriate, great, whatever the word is, if these guys were actually prosecuted in a court of law? But there's no, I mean, Vince Bugliosi has been on this program probably 20 times over the last 8 years, 8 or 9 years since he wrote his book, The Prosecution of the George W. Bush for Murder, in which he said that any prosecuting attorney in the United States who has in his county or in his jurisdiction has had a U.S. soldier die in Iraq, any one of those people could bring a charge of murder against George W. Bush for the death of that soldier. And he lays out the exact bill of particulars in his book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. He's got a movie out about this now, a documentary, Vince Bugliosi. It's his last name is spelled as if it was pronounced Bugliosi, but it's Bugliosi. The guy who prosecuted Charles Manson, who wrote Helter Skelter. And nobody has picked it up. Nobody, I mean, you know, everybody's reading the book, but no prosecutor has said, okay, I'll go with this. The country has become so polarized, so politicized, and in a, particularly with the Supreme Court giving so much political power to hard right billionaires, that it's just, I don't see it happening. And I think that a pardon is a state. It's a basically a finding. It's a statement of fact by the executive branch, by the president, that crimes were committed. And we need to have that, in my opinion. Mark, thank you for the call. Dave in St. Charles, Missouri. Hey, Dave, you're asking, am I out of my mind?
Yeah. Tom, I thought about it while I was waiting on hold. And no, I'm not going to say that, but I disagree very strongly. Are we a nation of laws or not?
We're not.
We're not.
No, we're not. We have claimed that we were from our founding, but there have always, from 1787 until today, rich and powerful people have gotten away with things that poor and non-powerful people don't get away with. It's really simple. We call ourselves a nation of laws. We try to be a nation of laws, but we're not. No country is.
It bothers me that they can just walk. The only rational thing I guess we can do is do what you're talking about, is just to, if that's the only thing we can do, but political expediency is just, oh, it kills me.
Me too. Me too. The whole idea of real politic, of Henry Kissingerism or Bill Clintonism or whatever, you know, oh, we'll take, you know, we'll triangulate, we'll take the compromise, all, it makes me cringe. That said, this, you know, labeling George Bush and Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice and Alberto Gonzalez and all the people and John Yoo and Jay Bybee and all these other guys, labeling them as war criminals and then pardoning them, at least labels them as war criminals. Nobody else is going to do that other than, you know, a few of us here ranting on Progressive Talk Radio. It's not happening. Dave, thank you for the call. And because it's not happening, I mean, just, you know, what's the old thing about, you know, alcoholism and families or whatever it may be? You know, it's, first you've got to identify the problem. First you've got to call it out. And we've got to, you know, we've got to label George W. Bush.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
George W. as in war criminal. Let's just make it that way. We'll be back. Minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Just to recap very quickly. In 1776, the Battle of Long Island, the Continental Army, George Washington's army, had to flee back to Manhattan. The British had taken 11,500 men and women prisoners, and they were holding them in ships in the in the East River, 11,500. Excuse me. The British weren't just holding 11,500. 11,500 died in those prison ships. The remains of those 11,500 people were buried along the bank of the East River. In 1808, they were gathered together on Jackson Street into a tomb near the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Thanks to Bill, by the way, for sending me this information. It's called the Prison Ship Martyrs Monument History. It's now a monument about it. There's a history, an arc of history that goes over 100 years on this. But this is how the British treated American prisoners of war. They let 11,500 people die. This is just in the Battle of Manhattan, the Battle of Long Island. And George Washington looked at this, General George Washington looked at this, fighting the Revolutionary War against this kind of torture and violence. And just this one battle, 11,500 dead prisoners. George Washington looked at this, and as Senator Hillary Clinton said on the floor of the United States Senate, he said, "We're not like that. That's not who we are," to paraphrase President Obama. Here's Hillary Clinton.
When General Washington led his soldiers across the Delaware River and onto victory in the Battle of Trenton, He captured nearly 1,000 foreign mercenaries, and he faced a crucial choice. How would General Washington treat these prisoners? The British had already committed atrocities against Americans, including torture. As David Hackett Fisher describes in his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Washington's Crossing, thousands of American prisoners of war were treated with extreme cruelty by British captors. There are accounts of injured soldiers who surrendered being murdered instead of quartered. Countless Americans dying in prison hulks in New York Harbor. Starvation and other acts of inhumanity perpetrated against Americans confined to churches in New York City. Well, you can imagine, the light of our ideals shone dimly in those early dark days, years from an end to the conflict, years before our improbable triumph and the birth of our democracy. General Washington announced a decision unique in human history, sending the following order for handling prisoners. Treat them with humanity and let them have no reason to complain of our copying the brutal example of the British Army in their treatment of our unfortunate brethren. George Washington understood that how you treat enemy combatants can reverberate around the world. We must convict and punish the guilty in a way that reinforces their guilt before the world and does not undermine our value.
There you go. There you go. And instead, we went ahead and tortured people. George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Alberto Gonzalez, John Yoo, Jay Bybee, Paul Wolfowitz. I mean, the bunch of them spit in the face of George Washington, stomped on his grave. And not just George Washington. Abraham Lincoln, after the Civil War, or, you know, let me get the exact year here. April 24th, 1863, Abraham Lincoln wrote what became the Geneva Conventions. Excuse me, the Hague Conventions. The Hague Conventions, the first formal statement of what is a war crime. It was written by Abraham Lincoln. Now, oddly enough, you know, since the Bush administration, we have not signed on to it. Bush unsigned us. As I recall, I'm pretty sure. So our people cannot be prosecuted in that criminal court that Abraham Lincoln helped create. But George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, that they laid out the rules for how you treat your prisoners. You do not torture them. Same thing with Dwight Eisenhower as the leader of Allied, the supreme commander of Allied forces going into Europe in the 1940s. I forget which year the actual invasion was, about 44, I think, in Normandy. The exact same thing. Germans surrendered to the Americans because they knew they'd be treated well. We could have done so much better if we had just behaved as in a way that was consistent with our values. But no, we had a president and a vice president who were out of sync with mainstream America. George W. Bush was gleeful about all the people that he executed as governor of Texas. He wanted to be a commander in chief during time of war. He thought, you know, people dying on the battlefield was a glorious and noble thing because he had never seen a battlefield. Dick Cheney with his 5 deferments, same deal. George W. Bush had actually gone AWOL for over a year, which, by the way, is called desertion. And these guys have just skated their entire lives. As one of the folks in our chat room, Richard M. Brown, says, when an offender is trying to change and correct their past behavior, it is often necessary to lay out the full extent of their behavior to the victims. That process is grueling and painful for both the offender and their victims. This process is what the U.S. needs to go through regarding torture and our destructive behavior during the Bush administration. I believe any pardon of administration officials must require those officials to fully disclose the extent of those crimes and misbehaviors. I agree with everything. I agree with the entire statement. The last sentence, though, ain't going to happen. There's no way that Bush or Cheney are ever going to say, yes, we were wrong. These are people who believe that just, you know, Well, no, I'm not going to go there. But they are going to go to their graves asserting that they did nothing wrong. And so it's time, I think, for the president to say, yeah, what they did, it was a crime. I'm going to pardon them for it, but I'm going to lay out a bill of particulars. Here's a prosecutor's indictment. Bill in Sun City, Arizona. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Tom. Although I agree with either an indictment or a pardon for the reasons you describe, we can't stop there. We have to... Well, Roberts and Alito should be removed as fruit from a poison tree, and the rest of the appointment should be removed as well. We have to prune the tree of liberty.
Yeah.
And that's how it's done, as good gardeners.
I don't disagree in principle. I don't see how that gets... I mean, the only way you can remove a sitting Supreme Court justice is through impeachment. Impeachment has to be done in the House and the Senate. It requires, you know, two-thirds vote of majority vote in the House and a two-thirds vote in the Senate.
Excuse me?
The only way that... Can you hear me, Bill?
Yes, I do.
Okay. The only way that you can remove a Supreme Court justice is by impeachment. And, you know, I don't know of any other mechanism. Do you?
But in light of criminal ongoing,
right,
and the Bush-Cheney administration is just that.
Right.
That these people are... contributed to that crime.
Well,
all of them, every one of them contributed to that crime as they supported it.
I don't think you're going to find
this fruit from a poison tree.
I understand your principle, and I agree with it in principle, but I don't see how you're going to draw a line from Sam Alito or John Roberts to Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo or some black site where torture was going on. I don't see that. And I do, you know, I agree. If you had an outlaw administration, then
somebody, if a known criminal appointed somebody to a position or an unknown criminal, let's say, and then was discovered to be a criminal, and in their term, they put some people into positions of power, Tom, these are extenuating circumstances. This is not normal circumstances.
Right, but the fruit of the poison tree argument that you're making,
the way they are, doesn't mean they cannot change.
The fruit of the I may be wrong on this. I'm not a criminal defense attorney, but my understanding is that the fruit of the poison tree argument you're making is that evidence used to prosecute has been contaminated by the process that brought it forward. And, you know, that's fine in a court of law, but I don't see how that applies to Sam Alito or John Roberts. I mean, we could take it back to it was the Supreme Court that selected George W. Bush and made him president. Al Gore got 500,000 more votes. Al Gore got more votes in Florida, in fact, when the New York Times a year later actually counted the ballots. It turns out, you know, George W. Bush lost Florida. In fact, you could argue that Jeb Bush's purging of 80 or 90,000 African Americans of the voting rolls a few weeks before the election in 2000, you know, it was a crime that handed the presidency or got him within stealing distance to his brother. You know, there's a lot of things that we could say. These are the poisons of the poison tree. And, you know, subsequent to that, you know, we're going to revert. But there's no practical way to do that, Bill.
Just because things are the way they are doesn't mean they cannot change. And these are the most extenuating circumstances that this nation has ever seen.
Well, I don't think that's true. We're not in the midst of a civil war right now. We have been to hell and back.
Let me ask you, because you're much smarter than me. In other instances of wrongdoing in other countries, has another country ever stepped in to be the arbiter of the facts?
I think that Vietnam stepped into Cambodia and stopped Pol Pot. And certainly, you know, the United States and Russia stepped into Europe to stop Germany. So, yeah, I think it's happened in the past. Bill, thank you for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
If you haven't heard Dianne Feinstein's speech and John McCain's speech today in the Senate, go find them. They're amazing. Welcome back. Mary in Bourne, Texas. Hey, Mary. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Oh, you know what? About the pardons.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to get the public to care? They didn't care enough to go out and vote in November. They knew the planes, the white unmarked planes. They were no secret.
The unmarked planes.
We went into Haiti and messed up their government. That was no secret.
Right. I think that what Americans, let me organize my thoughts here. First of all, I think that low voter turnout is very often a consequence of negative advertising that causes people to just shrug their shoulders and say, they're all crooks, right? Both sides are attacking the other and saying how horrible the other person is. They're all crooks. To heck with it. I'm not going to vote, right? That's what happens. And because negative advertising does not shift votes to your candidate, it causes people not to participate. And that's a problem in our democracy that we can trace back to the Supreme Court's calling money the same thing as speech. I think that the American people actually do care. I think that there's a large plurality of or a large majority, for that matter, of Americans who do care and who would be astonished and enthusiastic if Obama was to lay out a bill of particulars against Bush and then say, you know, I'm not going to try and put you in jail about this, but this does need to be on the record what you did.
Astonished.
What do you think?
And enthusiastic.
Oh, Mary, you're listening to the TV. Thank you for the call, Mary. Jesse in Miami, Florida. Hey, Jesse, what's up? Jesse? You can't listen to your TV. You got to pick up your phone, Jesse?
Oh, hello, Tom. Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Yeah, I was off for a while. Hey, Tom, I know where you're coming from. It's more important issues you want to deal with, you know, instead of getting hung up on fighting.
That is not the argument I'm making, Jesse.
Huh?
That is not the argument I'm making. The argument that I'm making is that we have a very, very small number of chances, a very, very tiny window for this administration to do anything about the crimes of the Bush administration.
I agree, but let me make a point.
Go for it.
If we do go along with the pardon and you just think of the future, somebody else come along, do the same thing, say, well, I could get a pardon out of this.
Right.
We need to make a stand. Because if we pardon evil, we are evil.
But, Jesse, nobody is going to want to be pardoned. If President Obama were to establish a precedent of calling out his predecessors when they commit crimes, I believe future presidents would be less likely to commit crimes.
I don't think so. These guys knew what they was doing. You see how the calls and everybody pretty much is against the opinion of a pardon because these guys are evil. And
I understand.
No pardon will prevent this from the future. So we got to start now, because if we don't, ain't no society too big to fail.
But we don't. This is not a perfect republic, Jesse. There is no national consensus for this. There's no congressional consensus for this. The only place this could happen is in the White House.
Forget that we're in an evil empire now.
I think we're still evil empire. A certain level. I mean, there's a lot of good about the United States, too. Jesse, thank you for the call. I understand what you're saying, and I understand your outrage. I have not yet heard from anybody, and we've been doing this for almost 3 hours now, have not heard from anybody a scenario by which Bush and Cheney and company could be held accountable, except this scenario laid out by the ACLU's executive director. 10 minutes before the hour, Larry in Lancaster, California. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Tom. If you think Bush should be pardoned, then you must support Obama being pardoned.
Larry, you're fading out really fast. Can you make sure that you're talking right into the microphone and clearly?
Yes. If you think Bush should be pardoned, then you should support Obama being pardoned for drone strikes.
Okay. If I think Bush should be pardoned, then should Obama be pardoned for drone strikes? Yes. Yes, I think that the next president can look back on that. And frankly, I think that that'll start tamping down this kind of behavior because these people who run for president of the United States, they're not shrinking violets and they don't have small egos and they care big time about what posterity thinks about them, what everybody thinks about them. So if they know that they may be called out and even pardoned, that's still a horrible, horrible stain on their record as a president. And so I think it'll be consequential. And, you know, whether Obama's committing war crimes or not with regard to drones is a whole nother issue that should be, we can discuss at another time. But let's not lose our focus on what just happened, you know, in the United States Senate with this report. Jeff in Mount Hope, Wisconsin. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey,
Tom, I just wanted to say, you know, when I first called, I was on board with the impeach idea. But as I've listened to you, I've swung the other way, and I really think you're on to something. But also, let me ask you, because if they were pardoned for this crime, that would label them as a criminal. Would they lose their right to vote?
Probably not, because they're not, you know, a pardon erases a conviction. So they would not lose their right to vote. They would not lose their pensions. They wouldn't lose all the stuff that they would
otherwise. I thought that was kind of humorous. Maybe they did. But, yeah, we got to tag them somehow. And that may be the only way to do it.
Yeah, in my mind, it's sort of like, you know, the train is going by here, and it's going by fairly fast. We've got 2 years left in the Obama administration with a Republican Congress. There is a very limited window of things that could be done to hold Bush and company accountable. And I think that Anthony Romero's piece in the New York Times calling for a pardon for Bush and Cheney and company is absolutely brilliant, because it's sort of like the train's going by and we're just going to spray paint a war criminal on the side of it. And, you know, we're not going to be able to stop that train. George W. Bush is going to, you know, live happily in his retirement as the multimillionaire he was born as, you know, for the rest of his life. And Dick Cheney, you know, who had all that stock in Halliburton when he became vice president, Halliburton, that was on the verge of bankruptcy, now very, very rich from that. I mean, there's nothing we can do about those things, but tagging them, you know, tagging them, I think it's a big deal. Jeff, thank you for the call. Rich in South Bend, Indiana. Hey, Rich, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Good afternoon. People who are defending what Bush did, it's not a matter of results. It's a matter of law, and there is case law. During the Vietnam War, two Army guys were court-martialed for waterboarding a North Vietnamese prisoner. They were convicted. They spent like 5 years in Leavenworth and got a dishonorable discharge. So
in 1898, we prosecuted a group of Philippine soldiers for waterboarding one of our soldiers.
It's a matter of law.
Yeah, you're right. It is a matter of law. What Bush and company did was a violation of United States law and of international law, and they need to be held to account. That said, now we have to deal with the practical and political realities of this country. And will they be held to account by a court? No. Will they be held to account by a Republican Congress? Not a chance, not a snowball's chance in hell. The president, however, can hold them at least to account by as far as identifying what they did. And the pardon, I think, is just like it's like a noble backslap. You know, it's double reverse judo. It's amazing. Rich, thank you for the call. Regina in Romulus, Michigan. Hey, Regina.
Hi, Tom. I'm just calling today to thank you for bringing this to light during this discussion today. I'm calling because I'm remembering my father on this day, who was a staff sergeant in World War II and was captured in the Battle of the Bulge.
Whoa.
And survived, held for 6 months. He was placed in boxcars. He was marched in the freezing cold and was able to return home. But he said on Liberation Day, he described to us a colonel parachuted into the prison camp. He brandished his weapon, and he said, "Any of these men harm you in any way?" And he was referring to the guards. And I just want to share that story because that is who we are.
Yes.
And I'm so grateful that you have brought this to light today, so at least we can think about the fact that we had an American president that allowed torture.
Right. We're the country that liberates the victims of torture, not the country that provides the torture.
That's what my father fought for. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And yes, I agree with you, Tom. And thank you for what you have done today and for all of those who are listening to you.
Thank you, Regina. Thank you for your kind words. Appreciate the call. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. We got a minute to the end of the show, Charles.
All right. I strongly disagree with not trying to prosecute people who've done these things, because you have to think about all the time I'm listening to Fox News, which I just think is just stirring up hate for against Americans. That's their main job. But you got to think of all the terrorists that they say have come out of Guantanamo and have gone, you know, supposed to be terrorists, and have gone back into the field and turned into Al-Qaeda. And now you got to realize why. We've tortured these people to the point where they want to kill
the recidivism rate. Hang on just a second, Charles.
These people prosecuted are the Americans that deserve what they
Charles, we're just about out of time. The recidivism rate, the rate of reoffending, of leaving prison and becoming a criminal again, the recidivism rate in the United States is 85%. The recidivism rate coming out of Guantanamo is 6%. That we have had very, very few people come out of Guantanamo and offend against us again. They just want to get the hell out of town. And I would, too. Thanks so much for being with us today. Check out Anthony Romero's editorial. It's in the New York Times, nytimes.com. You know, it's there. It's easy to read. It's brilliant. And something I think we should all be calling on the president, President Obama, to pardon George W. Bush and his buddies for the crime of torture, for war crimes. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.